And if you have those people feeling that way and on board in terms of your own line of business, say, then the next another element is that you make sure that you are open to their ideas, radical or not, and that they will get consideration. And out of that, all kinds of things are possible. I have seen an example or so of people really being put down because they didn't dress right, or their hair was long, or they were a wild guy, or they had crazy ideas or something. There is room for those kinds of people in our, if we're looking for innovation. And it doesn't mean we have to have mad scientists. I don't mean that at all.
Right, no. Right.
But I do think a part of the environment for successful innovation, et cetera, is the knowledge by the people that they're going to have a chance, and that somebody will listen if they have even what seems on the face of it a screwy idea. So does that answer your mind?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What experiences did you have in terms of dealing with innovators?
Several, some of which were along this mad scientist type that I just mentioned. I can recall one fellow who the research management wanted to run off, and yet he was about the third most creative guy in the whole bunch, in that whole group. And I just said, I just think you have to make allowances and tolerate some of this. And I know it's hard. And it's hard for me when he comes into a meeting and says crazy things and what have you. And basically in challenging authority, that sort of thing. So there have been some examples of that. There was at the topmost level in shell development, there was a PhD chemical engineer, brilliant, by the name of Tom Barron. That name ring bell?
That's familiar, yeah.
Well, he's University of Illinois, one of the top chemical engineering brains, apparently, and he's dead now. Tom was a womanizer. Everybody knew it, including his wife. Tom was brilliant, though, and he had absolutely zero concept of organization. But he was the kind of guy that if you could get through some of that, just live with some of that, you could find some real nuggets. When I was president of Shell Chemical, he was president of Shell Development. Of course, the development was doing essentially, not all, but essentially the research work, all, pretty much all of it for the chemical side. Well, obviously we had to get along. We had to talk to each other, exactly. At times that was very difficult with Tom, but it worked, and he was successful in his job. I think more than once somebody was ready to run him off.
What do you think is, well, let me back up for a moment. We've gone through a period where a lot of companies have felt if they want a new technology, they're going to buy it. And instead of nurturing their own innovation and creativity, What's your reaction to that? Did you do any of that?
Well, I think that is a, there is a role for licensing or buying others' technology at times. It depends, I think, on the commercial aspects of things. I think I can see it being a very easy decision at times to say, look, a license from Carbide on Unipol is going to cost us such and such, and we can estimate that out through the years, and the cost to us of developing something better or even competitive with it are at such and such odds, and that commercially it just doesn't make good sense. Besides, we've got these people and we can do this, something else with them. You know, we don't have to work on Unipol type technology. So I can see that there is that there can be there can be times when that's quite acceptable. I do think that building your own base is also very, very fundamentally important. Now, if you're going to, I'm not really talking about the wildest basic research, from the product-oriented research, and if you're business is going to be sold. Take the agricultural chemicals business of Shell, which was sold to DuPont. Well, obviously now you really shouldn't be doing a lot of biological research over here, and those people could be used better somewhere else. So. But in support of your ongoing, strategically planned businesses, I think fundamentally you should have your own research base, and the more capable, the better.
But isn't it true that in recent years a lot of companies have short-sighted that?
I think they have, from what I understand.
Yeah. What about Shell?
I think they have to some degree, from what I know. You have to remember now, I've been gone a long time, and there's really not much interface with the company. I don't have much interface with them.
Is that by design?
It was by design for quite a long while. It pretty much, you know, time just goes on. I don't even recognize some of the names of some of the people that are being promoted and that sort of thing. So you lose interest.
Mm-hmm.
And Shell Oil does not have its own stock, so I'm not a shareholder. I'm a shareholder of Royal Dutch, but that's a pretty good stretch. I draw a pension, and that's pretty well formalized. I don't have to interface with them on that. I'm not really invited to dinner with the directors or anything of this sort, because you know time has gone by, and so it's there's just not much. There is a lot of interface with people who are retired. You know, there are lunches, this bunch and that bunch and all this sort of thing, and it's great reminiscing.
Well, I've sort of come to the end of my questions. Is there anything you'd like to add that I haven't?
Well, one thing you had on the end of here is, what did it mean to me to win the medal? Well, it meant a great deal. Among other things, by then, of course, a lot of the improvement in Shell Chemicals, health and welfare had occurred, was continuing to occur, and recognition of that from the standpoint of my people was important to me. I thought that was, you know, it's a great way to say, look what you guys have done. You put this thing into a shape where obviously we have a chance to step up and be recognized. And that's good. So it meant a great deal from that standpoint. Personally, it's honors are nice to have. much nicer than criticisms. But I'd say it's number two on my list from my old age perspective. Number one is my honorary degree from Tulane, and that really meant something. And you know, going way back to where we started this conversation, that there are things that occurred there that that come to mind ever so often. And when through the years you're tied to that kind of a situation, your recognition that that really was one hell of a good education, really. Otherwise, you know, none of the rest of this would happen. And then to recycle and have that, that meant a great, great deal. It meant a great deal to my family. Probably as for my children, as much or more than to me, I guess. Anyhow.
It's marvelous. It's wonderful. What do your children do?
Well, my oldest daughter is a lawyer. You know, so they're not all bad. she's a vice president and general manager in a in I think it's the largest title company in the Dallas area. It's called Safeco. Was in private practice, private firm for a number of years, did litigation work, and this is different. And it's a lot less pressure, and I'm glad for her sake that it's a lot less pressure. Lawyers do crazy things like working all night and then trying to do things the next morning. Anyhow, she's in good shape. I have a son who is not in good shape physically. He's 42 and he's kind of a physical wreck. Back problems and stuff like this. He lives out in Fredericksburg, Texas, in the hill country, and basically is in the home building business. Did not graduate from college, got 3.5 years and decided it wasn't worth it, which has bugged me ever since, of course. And then my youngest daughter is a counselor, psychological and social counselor in a public school system in Wilton, Connecticut.
So she stayed with the roots in Connecticut?
She stayed back there. Mm-hmm. And although she's an SMU graduate, and she just turned 40 yesterday. She's a great gal. And some of the stories of the kids that she deals with, she handles 5th, 6th, and 7th graders.
Well, that's a tough group.
Some of the stuff, I don't know how she does it, Jim. It would drive me crazy.
I admire anybody who does that kind of thing.
Well, and it's not very well paid either, as you know.
Yeah, they get the dedication. They get people who are so dedicated to it that the pay is unfortunate.
She just loves it, though, because she says, you know, and I may not be able to help anybody at all for 2 weeks in a row, and then something will come along, and I may be really able to do some good, and that makes it all worthwhile.
It's marvelous.
Yeah.
It's marvelous.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I think I'll thank you for spending the afternoon with me.
Well, Jim, it's been my pleasure. As I said, I'm afraid I've been too verbose.
No, not at all. It's going to be a very good transcript. I apologize for the problems we had at the beginning. And I guess I should apologize to the transcriber who's going to have to face those problems when she gets the tapes. But again, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
You're most welcome.